Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. They ain't going to be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Black won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control buildings and industry, and put that pools in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for a lead. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folk got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations who got the money. That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money from the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor, that is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk only control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about something like about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. And you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad-mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisoners in the United States are black people. Even though you only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate them. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March, well, who cares? Marching, they never changed anything.
Oh,
Many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week, 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out.
He said, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But, man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, shoot it! So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again. This time on the near side. For another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarian Stiles. The kid no one would pick. Was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarian can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
Now, learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. This, God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said this man that went to heaven, he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. And messed around, he saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he said, nah, I want to know what's in the door. He said, you sure you want to see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had nothing but shelves on it. And then the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings, all of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him, and then you felt like you wasn't worthy, and so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room, and I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me, and I said, I want you to do this graph for me, and that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you happen is, when God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it because your package going to go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on not meant to be way, because your package is going to keep going right on by. Because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go on pity way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off, because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box gonna get sent back to sender. And now you're gonna have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places. I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he can fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she's been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad a cap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin if he will come.
I was talking to a cat the other night. He said, well, everybody's looking for this. What everybody's looking for today? They're looking for escapism.
Look at him. What you say, Fred?
Man,
nigga on the lam.
You better watch the man.
I don't like the hood. What you said, Fred?
I said we better take it on the lam out here.
You better watch the man.
But
come over here, brother. Let me tell you. You think we're talking too loud?
First, that's first.
I ain't got no dust.
I don't have to take it on the land.
Watch that man.
Huh?
Watch that man.
Watch him. Yeah, all right. You're right. Yeah, yeah. Coming from some funny places. What you say, bro?
What's happening? Wow.
Trying to get down.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, you know, look at him. We can't have that. Man, I don't dig it. What you say, Jeton?
Hey, don't be so mean.
You know I'm clean now.
And on the seat.
Excuse me, cat, while I rap.
How'd it go?
We got one out of two of them motherfuckers, you know?
You mean you motherfuckers come strolling in here all walking tall and shit?
Look, yeah, man, I'm saying, man, we was blazing on them dudes, man, you know what I'm saying? Just got in the heat, man. We was blazing, though. It was late.
All right, relax, man. I already heard. Go sit down. I'm not tweaking behind none of this. That's one less motherfucker that's breathing than was yesterday, you know what I'm saying? So we all good. But I'm surprised at you, though, man. Shit didn't get by you back when.
Well, my man's fault, man. I unloaded on the younger too soon, man. Gave him enough room to buck and run, man. I fucked that shit up myself, you know.
Hold on. So on me. I had that kid in my sights. Close enough to take off his Kango and half his dome with it. Couldn't squeeze the trigger. Couldn't do it, man.
Why not?
Wasn't in me, I guess. You know, whatever it is in you that lets you flow like you flow and do that thing, it ain't in me no more.
All right. So you done soldiering, but you ain't done. Could use you for what you got in your head. We're going to put you on a corner. You could be inside.
Oh, man. I ain't making myself clear. The game ain't in me no more. None of it.
But you ain't done shit else. You know what I'm saying? So what you going to do?
But it can't be this.
All right, then. We straight.
B, he was a man in his time, you know?
He a man today. He a man.
All right. We had technical difficulties yesterday. I got booted off of here at least five times myself. The problem wasn't with Blog Talk. I thought it was. It wasn't with Blog Talk. It was with my modem. So I called my service provider. And they tried to do a reboot from wherever they're centrally located, and then that didn't work. And then they instructed me to unplug the modem, which I did, and then waited on my cell phone, smartphone, until when they told me to plug it back in. Because I'm on a landline speaking right now. It went from the difficulties to getting booted offline at least 5-6 times, then to no dial tone on the phone I'm speaking on right now. So anyway, everything's been good since then. So we're doing a follow-up from yesterday, and we're going to do probably at least once a month on this topic. No one lives here. No one lives here. So before we get into it, on our Blog Talk scrolling marquee, I've got some maps, and I had those maps up yesterday. I added on two other pieces of information. They're not maps, but they give you some statistics. So if you're on a Blog Talk Radio, that's in the scrolling marquee on Blog Talk Radio on our page there. It's My House or Solo Landlord. Or you can go to our Facebook page, all right, which is It's My House TV. It's My House TV on Facebook. And I've got the maps that I had yesterday plus two more pieces of information. They're all in one post, giving you some statistical information from the United States Census Bureau. So the maps are not my concoction, neither are the statistics. Okay. And we'll be speaking from that. Now, some of the things that we're going to touch on today in today's podcast is titled No One Lives Here. And today we're going with chess because I like to explain things in terms not only statistics, but, you know, I think the game of chess can really teach you a lot of life lessons and business lessons and things of that nature. So some of the topics that we'll be going over today, stop counting other people's wealth, 19,500 municipalities, let's see, reparations, 1776 to 1938, asset building equals gold eggs, Black Wall Street versus No One Lives There. So, and that and a few other topics. So we'll be back in a few minutes with No One Lives Here, chess.
What? Just like that. Oh, no, you didn't. Wait a minute. No, you didn't. Hey, Jay! Hey! Jay! 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 Come back here! Jay! You disloyal, fool-ass, bitch-made punk. Jay! I need my money! Jay! Oh, you motherfuckers. Okay. All right. I'm putting cases on all you bitches. Huh? You think you can do this shit? Jay! You think you can do this to me? You motherfuckers will be playing basketball in Pelican Bay when I get finished with you. Shoe program, nigga. 23-hour lockdown. I'm the man up in this piece. You'll never see the light of day. Who the fuck you think you fucking with? I'm the police. I run shit here. You just live here. Yeah, that's right. You better walk away. Go and walk away, because I'm going to burn this motherfucker down. King Kong ain't got shit on me.
Because I used to observe that a lot of those shacks used to be by the track where black people were.
With the room in the back.
Yes, with the room in the back. That was a safety net.
Yeah.
Where black people who would move here and there and go from here and there looking for jobs, that's usually why we move, and the jobs would play out like they always did.
And do.
But we had a place to go when the sun went down. But now, those shacks by the track don't exist anymore. They came and built highways right alongside of those railroad tracks where those shacks used to be. Super highways. So now, if you get on a highway, you might notice that if you sometimes you are right alongside of a railroad track. You see a train's passing
that
as you're driving.
That is true.
Down a superhighway.
Mm-hmm.
Well, see, those highways used not to be there in the northwestern hemisphere. It used to be shacks along there. A lot of those shacks were on what we call railroad property. But the railroad people, the people that ran the railroads, didn't care much because nobody wanted to be down. That wasn't prime real estate.
No.
Nobody wanted to be by the tracks anyway. So black people used to build those shacks around there back when black people knew how to build shacks. Black people don't know how to build anything now because they used to build places for white people, but they cut them off with things called unions, took them out, took the carpentry all out of the schools and all like that. So how many black people do you know how to fix anything now? It used to be thousands and millions of black people that know how to build a house from scratch out of old pieces of lumber.
Wow.
A lot of people don't remember that. Most people are not that old to have seen it done. I'm coming along. I'm old enough to remember when many black people used to get together on a Saturday afternoon. That was the only time they had off, or sometimes, or on a Sunday sometimes after church. They would get together, six or eight of them, and go down and build what they call a shotgun house. It wasn't much, but it was a roof over your head, a good solid roof. I've been in some of those houses, raised up in some, all right? Excellent, solid houses. They could stand a lot of storm and rain. They weren't much, just maybe three rooms. But I've been in some of them. And there were many, 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 many of them. But along came the white supremacists and say, these Negroes know how to build stuff. We're going to fix that so the next generation won't know how to do anything except stand in front of a place that is built and big. Because they won't know anything about carpentry or masonry or how to make anything with their hands.
All right, so continuing on from yesterday, no one lives here. Chess. And the reason why I like to use the game of chess is to, and I've said on this, anybody who's played chess, the very first thing that you must learn in the game of chess is the board. The board represents the landscape. There are people that play chess blindfolded. And there's some people that are like grandmasters at playing chess. They can play multiple people blindfolded and win because they know the landscape. They know the landscape. If you don't know the landscape, you are at a disadvantage. You've got to know the landscape. With anything you're doing, you need to learn the landscape. So therefore, I call it today's podcast, No One Lives Here Chess. Now, if you go to our Facebook page, and it's My House TV, and I have the top link. I have about 6 to 8 maps, and they're titled No One Lives Here. So in the ones where you see green and white, the green areas reflect where nobody lives, okay? And the white areas are where you have, you know, more people, dramatically more people. I didn't make up the map. Somebody else did. All right. So you got two maps, at least two maps of the continental United States. No one lives here. And then you have another map of just the state of Alaska, and the state of Alaska is huge. It's over twice the size of the state of Texas. So, but you see the green and white there, and the green areas, some of it wilderness. No one lives there, right? A lot of space, okay? And we also have a global map of what is pink and white. And the pink areas, globally, no one lives there. All right? And we added two more items on from yesterday. These are not maps, but statistics. So let's, let me see, let me, okay, wait a minute, I got to do something real quick here. All right, now, okay, I got to go look it up on my phone. All right, here we go. Now, the U.S. Census Bureau, and this is on It's My House TV Facebook page within those maps. The Census Bureau has released its latest population. Now, this goes back to the 2020 census, okay, or May 21st, 2020, 2 years ago. All right, today the U.S. Census Bureau released its latest population estimates for cities and towns, and they reveal that most of the nation's population, which stands at 330 million, okay, you can look at the population clock in real time right now if you wish, that 76% of the population of the United States, which lives in, 36% of the population lives in 19,500 incorporated areas of the United States. That includes New York City as well as Bangor, Maine, as well as Summit, Oklahoma. 76% of the population lives in places that have fewer than 5,000 people. 76%. And that's what, if you want to find the real, in my opinion, if you want to find the real United States of America, where you can get out and do your thing, have a reasonably priced house that you can pay off quickly, or if you build it, you don't have to worry about that, but where you can live a sustainable lifestyle, where you're free, practically free from inequality, racism, and all that other stuff. The real United States, 76% of it, lives in towns. Now, this isn't L.A. This is the Census Bureau. They have 5,000 people or less. 5,000 people or less. Now, one of the things I said was, matter of fact, let's take some inventory here, particularly for black men. Let's take inventory. George Floyd killed in Minneapolis, Minnesota city. Now, once again, the metric that I'm using is based on the United States Census Bureau. All right? 76% of the population lives in towns that have 5,000 or fewer people. Now, George Floyd, Eric Gardner, I forgot the dude in South Carolina that got shot in the back by the cop. I forgot his name. Ahmaud Arbery, the dude that was sitting in Dallas, Texas, in his underwear in his apartment eating ice cream watching the ball game. Common denominator. denominator with all of these killings is they have been in densely populated cities. Every last one of them. Some in Oklahoma. I've been there twice. Some has about 100 people. You don't hear anything about that kind of thing happening in Summit, Oklahoma, or Nome, Alaska, or Bangor, Maine. 92%, I think it's 92.8% of the black population of the United States lives in towns that are over 5,000 people. And I would even venture to say that have over 50 to 100,000 people. 92.8%. Now, in the, once again, look at the map. 5% of the land mass, some say 3%, but 5% of the land mass, out of that 76%, now that they live in those white areas. If the two maps I'm talking about, you know, one says nobody lives here, and where you have, once again, check out the green areas. The green areas are where nobody lives, and the other map has a lot more green, but look at like New York City. You can the I-95 corridor, which is the largest splotch of white. That's 95. You know, that's D.C., Richmond, D.C., Baltimore, Philadelphia, New York City, going up to Boston. There's a lot of people. There's a lot of density in that area, and Eric Gardner lived in that area. Amadou Diallo lived in that area. Okay, if you go around Lake Michigan and you look at the part of Lake Michigan around that land base of land, Lake Michigan, the largest white splotch of color is the Chicagoland area. All right. And Florida, now if you go down to Florida, which has 67 counties, Trayvon Martin, and most of the stuff that you hear about going on in Florida, because people like to bring up with Florida, this, that, you know, it's in the white areas, not white people, but the one, you know, they got two colors, white and green. Most of the things that happen negatively to black folk, or anybody for that matter of fact, are in those white areas. The green areas, nobody or not a whole lot of people live there. All right. My advice to black men, to be honest, find you a town that's got 5,000 people or less, with emphasis on or less. Now, a lot of these towns, even the ones that have 100 people, are oftentimes striking distance, or what I call striking distance, of, you know, 20 minutes, 30 minutes away, 15, 20, 30 minutes away from a major hub. Not all, but some of them. You know, some areas, not like, if you look at the state of Texas, all right, most of the stuff, if you hear about somebody getting jacked up, no matter what color, it's going to be in Houston, San Antonio, the Dallas Metroplex, which includes Fort Worth, and Austin. You know, once again, find you a place that's got a population of 5,000 or less people. Now, you would think Uvalde would be safe because they had about, 15,000 people. But once again, this is the Census Bureau now. concentrate if you can, because crazy can happen anywhere. Crazy can happen anywhere, and it does happen anywhere. But statistically, towns that have a population of 5,000 or less, 5,000 people or less. Sorry. So let me go through some of the program notes here that I have on Blog Talk Radio. This is in no particular order, but I'm going to start where I've written these down. And, of course, you guys can chime in on your interpretation of the maps as well as anything that, you know, you want to throw in there. First thing I have here is stop counting other people's wealth. And I'll refer back to that later. I don't need to have anything. I don't need to have the penthouse that costs millions of dollars in New York or Chicago or L.A. I'm willing to go 30 minutes, 45 minutes, an hour, 2 hours, 3 hours away where there are less people, less rules and regulations, and the cost of living is dramatically lower. A lot of times in some of our discussions, you know, particularly when it comes to wealth, you know, well, they started early. See, when you read terms like they started early, or they had a 200 or 300 or 400 year jump. No, see, you're comparing. If you're comparing, and once you compare yourself, once you start counting somebody else's wealth, you automatically blind yourself to the wealth of opportunities that you're standing in. Here's some examples. Rihanna's a billionaire. Jay-Z's a billionaire. His wife, what's her name? Beyonce, she's a billionaire. Jay-Z's a billionaire. These people didn't look at other people's wealth. They looked at the and with them is entertainment, rap, and all that type of stuff. They looked, Dr. Dre, you know, billionaire. They looked at what opportunities that they had right in front of them, and they grasped hold of it. And one of the primary reasons why they became billionaires, they got into what had little. The common denominator with billionaires, they're into things that have little or no government regulation. Dr. Dre became a billionaire, large in part because of his Beats headphones. You really don't. Who gets locked up for selling headphones? Congress does not have any subcommittees on headphones. In your local jurisdiction, wherever you are, that the town, whatever you live in, from New York City to Podunk, Iowa, you know, there's nothing written. There's no regulation on headphones, lipstick, records, downloads. None of that stuff's regulated. Or if it is regulated, you might need a business license. That's it. That's the common denominator with most billionaires. They get into there's some things that billionaires, but Zuckerberg, Facebook is a glorified website. You don't need a business license to put up a website. Now, since he went public with Facebook, but I'm talking about he was a billionaire before he went public with Facebook. The common denominator amongst billionaires, get into something that has little or no government regulation. Stop looking at other people's wealth and money. Next thing I have on here, my program notes, and I've said this several times, there are 19,500 municipalities in the United States. Instead of marching and protesting in Selma and Birmingham and having a million-man march to Washington, D.C. twice and anywhere else that we've marched in protest, the promised land, and I need to put this in my notes. Which I'm doing right now. The promised land is where you can do your own thing. The promised land, it, matter of fact, let me see, promised land. The promised land are in these little rural areas where you can do your own thing. I'll jump ahead to Black Wall Street versus No One Lives There. O.W. Gurley bought 40 acres of land in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Now, let me put this in King James terminology, the Bible. Okay? Just as a refresher course for those who don't know, Moses and the Hebrews were in Egypt. Egypt was the grid back then. Well, it's still a grid now, but they were on the grid. Egypt had everything going for it, particularly in the capital city. The comfort and conveniences were there, and they were the slaves were there, and they got an opportunity to bounce out of Egypt. Some of the slaves were grumbling and griping and complaining. You know, Moses, and we're sitting up here in the world. We're sitting here in the desert starving. We would be better off back in Egypt. You know, at least we would be fed and have a place to sleep and all. We wouldn't know how to do for, and a lot of these people didn't know how to do for self out in the desert. Okay. Not all of them complained, but quite a few. All right. So they were headed to their promised land. Now, the promised land was basically undeveloped land. It was undeveloped land. Now, let's take this to the Tulsa riots in 1921, Black Wall Street. All right. O.W. Gurley had what appeared to be a good idea. All right. I'm going to buy me 40 acres of land. And I'm just going to sell the black folks, which he did successfully. All right. Now, he set up shop in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and where he set it up is I would equalize it to Egypt. He built his what he thought was a promised land in Egypt, which was Tulsa, Oklahoma. Now, throughout the state of Oklahoma, and this is documented, let's look up Black Townships, Oklahoma, there were 50 other black townships that were set up, about 13 to 15 of them exist right now. I've been to three of them. But none of those 50 townships experienced any kind of racial violence. The 13 or 15 that are still remaining, they're over 100 years old, typically, except for maybe IXL, which has about 51 people. But that's their promised land. They didn't set up shop in Egypt. The people that set up on Black Wall Street, I'm just, because I don't know them personally, trying to keep up, and where they were counting people, and their metrics was based on what white folks had. Whereas the 50 townships that have never been touched, they saw the opportunity, and most of those towns that are still surviving, it's about 13 to 15 of them, they can trace their lineage back to over 100 years. Your promised land, no matter what color you are, is in those green areas on the maps. Now, I have a world map on there, too, where the colors are pink and white. The pink areas where no one lives is your promised land. Now, you're going to have to develop some skill sets for that. Anyway, so, let's see, jumping down, because I'm jumping around here, 76% of the population, and I've said this already on here, 76% of the population of the United States lives in towns that have 5,000 or less people. There are 40,000 plus zip codes in the United States. Reparations. Now, reparations is a broad subject. It can be a controversial subject. But reparations can be paid out in many different ways. It can play out in many different ways. For me, I believe in self-reparations. For me, I don't need to go to any Congress or senator or any politician to write a bill. I'm not you know what? The only way I'm here's how I'm marching. I'm marching to the airport, or I'm marching to a car, or I'm marching to a pickup truck, and I'm driving to one of those pink or green areas on those maps I presented to you. I'll see what's available for sale, because you just can't squat on this stuff. Typically, somebody's selling. All that stuff that you see is for sale some kind of way. And I've demonstrated this in Oklahoma twice and here in Florida once. What about 15 acres that I have? All right. A lot of that stuff is for sale. So that's the only marching I'm doing. I am marching to a airport. I'll do that. Okay. I'll march to an airport, bus station, train station, somebody's car, pickup truck. And, for instance, I picked up an acre and a half in Oklahoma. I had just got back down here to Florida, and I was at the train station waiting on a ride to pick me up, and I got a phone call. And it was over a piece of land that I wanted in this particular town in Oklahoma. And he said, we negotiated on the price like real quick. And I said, all right, I'll be there next week. When I was there, matter of fact, it was probably less than a week. So anyway, that's my idea of reparations. I don't have to wait on the government. All right, now, let's see. Inflation calculator, I'll go through that. 1776 and 1938 metrics, I'll skip over that. Don't sell mama's house. That's a room that we have on Clubhouse, and then we have another room on there called club called Golden Goose Skills. And then we have a room with Reba. And Reba Meister, I got to pronounce that name correctly. Reba the teacher. Our room is, but she runs it. It's couples building wealth. All right. Let's see. Asset building. Capitalism has no color. Unless it's pink or green, according to the maps. Okay. In the green areas on the map, or if you're looking at the global map where no one lives, the pink areas, if you're a capitalist, that's where the action is. Go there and start your own thing. Let's see. Redlining versus geography. Redlining, you know, in all those green areas that you see, you got three maps of the United States. You got two of continental United States, and you got one of Alaska. Redlining has never existed in those green areas. Redlining just happens in those white areas, the white color areas. Not white people, just the white color areas of those maps. That's where you got a lot of people. So I avoid those areas. Let's see. All right, we already went through Black Wall Street versus no one lives here, or no one lives there. And then I'll close it out on this and get off my soapbox. Black folks don't have a race problem. they have a geography problem and a consumption problem. Now, this is just L.A.'s thoughts on this. The Underground Railroad, people who utilize the Underground Railroad, they found their way to the green areas on the map or the chessboard. Harriet Tubman, Josiah Henson, the original Uncle Tom, and I mean that in a good way, and we're going to have to go through that book one day, Uncle Tom's Cabin, because it was really Sambo. Sambo was the coon, and Uncle Tom was, you know, the righteous one. But Josiah Henson, okay, he went to the green areas on the map, because that's why I put Canada on there. Look at the map of Canada, and Canada has a larger landmass than the United States. He helped organize a 400-acre township, and he set up a trade school, helped set up a trade school for, you know, slaves, that runaway slaves who found themselves to the promised land. And once again, the promised land on those maps is the green areas, and globally, it's the pink area. Those are the promised lands in 2022, right now. And then he did another 400 acres for himself. Now, with the promised land, you've got to develop the skill set to live in those places. The Amish, and I think the Amish, let me see in my notes here. All right, the majority of Amish families have a business. They have a business. And those who don't have a business are working for somebody who, they're working for the family business, or they're working for a family member's, their business. That's how the Amish roll, and much of the Mennonite. They do simple-ass shit. Baked pies, shoe fireflies, and tater salad. They got restaurants, you know, family-based restaurants. They make furniture. They build cabins. They build houses. They build buggies. None of them are rocket scientist businesses. And see, some of those families are taking in, you know, $5 million or more a year. But if you look at where they live, and if you're listening to this podcast, you got an internet connection, they live right on the fringes of no one lives here. And they'll come into town and set up a farmer's market, and they'll sell to you. They'll sell their shoe fireplace. They don't live there in most of those places. They go back to where they live, which is primarily off the grid. So my thing is, you know what? If it's good enough for the Amish and Mennonite, and then they're not no fly-by-night type thing. And I'm not saying that you have to get into their religion or you have to, you know, travel by horse and buggy or dress like they dress and all that, this, that, or the other. But I like their lifestyle of, number one, having a family-based business, and number two, living as close as possible where nobody lives. And once again, black men out there, take inventory of the facts. Most of the high-profile homicide cases have happened in those areas where you see, you know, the light colorings on those maps. You know, I haven't heard nothing come out of Montana, or the Dakotas, or Maine or New Hampshire or Vermont or Idaho or Wyoming or Alaska, or let's get into Texas. Once you're outside of San Antonio, Austin, Houston, the Dallas-Fort Worth area, okay, look at the green areas of Texas. There's a lot of green in Texas. You're not going to have the comfort and conveniences of a lot of those big cities. But that's I call that consumption. All right, let me get off my soapbox. 773, your mic is open. 773. Okay, you might be muted.
I had you on mute. I do apologize. I'm just talking. Come on, stop.
Oh, okay. Okay, Reba.
Can you hear me?
Can you hear me? Yeah, I can hear you, yeah.
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you now.
Hello?
Yeah.
Okay, I don't know. There must be something wrong with my speaker because I'm actually driving too. I'm headed to a home going service. I'm going to slide through, you know.
I can hear you clear.
Sign a book. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay, I was trying to let my friend I just dropped off. He's a veteran, so we need to utilize some of the skills that the brothers have, brothers and sisters. And I would let him listen in a little bit, but my little cheap Android. So we couldn't really hear as clearly, but I'm going to see if I could maybe on tomorrow or something, see if I can get him, you know, three-way to call in. I'm going to send him the link again.
Okay, let me see.
Other than that, he should be able to call in. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Can you hear me now?
But apparently she can't hear me. All right, well,
okay.
Like I said yesterday, this might be one of those shows.
You can't hear me while my speaker's on. Is that it, Brother L.A.? Hello?
No. Hold it, man. Let's see. I can hear you clear. I can hear you clear.
Okay, so I'm going to can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, but we just can't. It's probably a delay or something. So I want to engage the veterans in on what we're doing. You feel me? There are a lot of homeless veterans, too. You know that, right?
Yep. Hold on.
That's what it's done.
Yes. She just mentioned it. Well, you just heard her. We had a lot of homeless veterans. Matter of fact, anybody who's homeless needs to a high degree, they need a geography lesson. Stop trying to live in New York, Chicago, L.A., Boston, City. Stop trying to live in all these big-ass cities. You know what? Most people that are homeless now, minus the ones that might have a mental defect or they have a substance abuse problem, they have a geography problem. Find a place that's got a population of 5,000 or less people and move to those areas. Legislation's not going to help you. You know, the new mayor, the new president of the United States is not going to help you. It's a geography thing. All right, hold it. Let me see. I'm going back and forth with Reba here. Wait a minute. Okay, wait a minute. Okay, hello? 410, can you hear me? 410. Man, what? Okay.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you now.
Oh, okay. I had you on mute.
Oh.
Yeah, I can hear you. I had you on mute.
Okay. All right. All right. What do you got for me?
You were talking to Reba. Have you finished talking with her?
Yeah, well, she can. I can hear her, but she can't hear me for some reason.
Oh. I heard your podcast yesterday. I didn't call in, but I listened in on it. And Warren Houston found some great information. I don't know if you heard it or not about these towns for sale.
I heard a teeny bit of it because my modem went out, so I was wrestling with that. I got booted off 5 times myself yesterday.
Yeah, I was listening to you struggling with it, but look, you said a lot of insulting things about black folks, but I won't get into that today. But look, I think what you have and what you've been saying is a very good idea. But you know what? Let me see.
What's the good part?
The good part is you have a very noble idea, and the idea will work. And Warren Houston proved yesterday that what you're talking about, there is some available properties out there. And the thing is this. It won't work for black folk because black males ain't worth a shit. Okay? And I say this. We have bought into this thing that we want to go back to slavery, and we won't organize, and we won't put our money together to do what you're talking about, because we got the money. We got the skill set. We got the infrastructure to do it. But the thing is, we have bought into this thing with these black conservatives and these black liberals that we want to be in the big house. And that's all we strive for. Instead of us going out.
Basically, let me ask you this now. All right, you're saying that you think black conservatives are saying they want to be in the big house. Let's put this in terms of politics, Democrats and Republicans.
No, it's not politics. This is thinking. And I say black conservatives and black liberals. I say black conservatives and black liberals. I'm not.
Okay,
look,
all right.
I'm talking about both ideals.
Okay.
And the reason why is because we bought into this foolishness that we need to be around white folk. And we don't to get out
there. You're right. I'm not going to argue with that.
Because, look, we have the infrastructure to do everything you're talking about and do it successfully. But what has happened is we want to be dark-skinned white folks on the inside. Now, those 50 towns that you talked about in
Oklahoma State, all over the country. Right.
Those black folks built those townships because they wanted to be independent of white rule and oppression. That's the only reason they didn't build it, because white folks didn't want them to integrate and all of this stuff. They did it because they wanted to be free. But you know, you have a lot of our people talking about, no, they did it because white folks wouldn't let them do this or wouldn't let them do this. These people went out on their own to make sure they had their own piece of dirt. Now, my thing is this year, a lot of us still want to be
slaves.
And
they did it from the rough. They did it from the rough. They had to develop it from zero, scratch.
Of course. And we can do that today. Don't say that we don't have the skill sets, because we do. And the thing is, we just don't have the will to go in and do what you've done. You've done the research. Warren Houston did the research, because he named out a bunch of abandoned towns that is for sale.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is, you're not going to get our people to go in and take that risk, or either venture out on their own to do that, because we've been brainwashed. And you can't deny that. I mean,
a lot of us like to for instance, it was a piece of property in Taft, Oklahoma, I was interested in some years ago. It was three siblings that grew up in Taft. Their father was the principal at the school in Taft when they did have a school. All three of them moved out of Taft, Oklahoma, and they all live in Atlanta, Georgia now.
Of course. But see, we bought into this idea that we can't live amongst ourselves, by ourselves. And the trick is this, Brother L.A., look, I'm just telling you now that I'm going to finish this thought first. Yes, there's a lot of land out here. And the thing is, some of it may or may not be for sale. But all I'm telling you is that all of a sudden we want to be black white folk. We don't want to get out there on our own. We're scared to death to get out there on our own. And until you change that mindset, what you're talking about ain't going to work for a bunch of us. And that's just,
on a critical mass basis, it's not going to happen. I already know that.
It's not going to work on a small scale. I don't know any small group.
Yeah.
No. And look,
lot of these black towns that were formed, they were they were formed by, it wasn't a whole big committee of people. It was typically maybe one or two families, oftentimes, that started those towns.
Yeah, but once those families
started. And to this day, a lot of those towns had probably no more than 100. I think that Langston, Oklahoma, they have over 1,000 people. But a lot of the black towns I set foot in might have about 100 people or less.
Well, but Brother L.A. was started with one or two people or three people.
Yeah,
and the rest of the
people one or two
bought
people.
In.
You're right. Right.
They bought in. And all I'm telling you is that you can't get people to do that today. Because the thing is, we've bought into this integration thing, and it's going to have to take a whole bunch of education to get people to see that. And it's pitiful. Now, the other thing that you said that I totally don't agree with, and we're going to go round and round on this. In the rural areas, some of them are redlined. And I'm going to explain my point.
Why I didn't get a response from your cousin, Sluggo.
Oh, hold it. Wait a minute. Continue, Brother Breeze. I muted her mic. Go ahead.
I'm going to prove my point. There's some areas that's unoccupied that even if they're for sale and black folk want to pay above market price for them, white folks ain't going to sell it to them. Now, I know you're going to have some words to say about this, but the thing is, you can have all the money you want. If it means that you're going to buy a big swath of land, white folks is not going to sell it to you. Even though it's for sale, they'll take that for sale sign down. Now, you may not call it redlining, but that's what it is, because black folks ain't in these cities because they just want to live in the cities. You got a whole bunch of them that came from rural areas to find work.
True.
But the thing is, the way it's set up now, they got them corralled in these inner cities, and they don't want to let black folks out. Now, you can take that for what it's worth, and you don't have to agree with it, but I'm going to just tell you like it is.
Well, all right, I'm going to agree with you on that. And because if you've got, and you sent me some information last week on, and thank you for doing that, on, land ownership with some of these families that own, like, thousands of acres of land. You're not going to run into too many of us that are thinking on that level of owning 1,000-plus acres of land. That's the first thing.
No, you're not. And look, I'm going to tell you this here. You ain't going to be able to, even if we got the money, somebody's not going to sell us that land. I'm going to just be honest with you, Brother L.A. Now, I know you come along at a time when you thought everything was, everybody was judged on their content, judged on the content of the character and not the color of their skin, but that's out there. I had a friend.
Well, I admit I'm naive.
Yeah, you're naive because look.
I admit I'm naive, and I wear rose-colored glasses. I admit that.
Okay, well, Here's a point that I'm going to make with you that I experienced. Me and my wife's cousin saw a for sale sign on a piece of property. It was 200 acres.
Mm-hmm.
We had the money. The real estate agent wanted to sell it. They were almost getting ready to sell it to us until that person that wanted to sell the property saw who we were. And he immediately said, well, you know what? I changed my mind. And he made that real estate agent take the sign down. Now, that's personal experience. So now you're talking about going out there buying land. That's one of the minefields that you got to navigate around. So
I'm glad you brought that up. I'm glad you brought that up. Now let me ask you this, okay? And I'm sure that's happened to a lot of people. Man, for how many acres was that, Beasley?
Huh?
How many acres was that?
200 acres of prime farmland.
That's a lot of land. That's 200 football fields. Okay.
That's right.
And now I'm glad you brought up navigate. Now, this is a strategy that I think when people are coming across, particularly that chunk of, that's a lot of land, 200 acres. Man, that's enough to put up like two towns. What if you had the strategy of having, it's something my mother told me. She told me this more than once. She said, get a white front. Now, what if you had a white front that went in? What do you think would have happened then? That's what my mother told me that at least two or three times. Get a white front. She said, don't get a person, and I got white friends who listen, so no offense, I'm just telling what my mother said, because she was from New Orleans, Louisiana, deep south. Born October 3rd, 1926. So she saw stuff that I can't even imagine. All right. So, but that's what she told me. So business is business, the way I look at it. So she said, just don't get anybody with a college degree. Just get somebody. I'm telling you how she said it. Get a white person and put a suit on them. Don't get somebody who's, they can be even dropped out of high school. That's what she said. Okay. So, and you know what? And I'm willing to do that.
Oh.
But
I mean,
what do you think
look,
about that stress?
Hey, look. I see you got jokes this morning, but anyway, let me.
No, she did
brother,
say that, though.
I've seen people do that, okay? I've seen people do that. And the thing is this. It might work. But I'm just telling you now, that's one of the things you have to navigate around. Now, you know,
right.
Yeah. And then again, you got some people, and I'm going to trade with no chaser. You got some white folks that is not going to go against the grain and do something for you that their people don't like, and I'm putting it pleasantly. You know, there are not a lot of nigger lovers out here. And the thing is, if they see you doing that, they know land is power. And they're going to look at that from a racist point of view and say, well, shit, I mean, if these niggas are going to get that much, then, hey, I don't mind them getting a little bit, but this here's a bit much. Now, that's in the back of a lot of people's mind, too. Now, what you're talking about is far and few between. White folks don't generally sell like white folks. Come on, brother L.A. That's why I come there where they are and we're where we are. And look,
right.
I keep repeating this to you over and over again. I keep repeating this to you over and over again. Another reason why what you're saying, and it's a good idea, can work or would work. See, black folks aren't racist. If we were racist, see, we'd be practicing self-preservation and survival of the fittest. We know the importance of getting land and being off to ourselves so that we could do what we wanted to do. And that's a problem. See, everybody else in this world are racist except black folks. See, we have been trained and propagandized to the point that, hey, look, we supposed to love everybody. See, everybody thinks like we think. We don't judge people for their actions. You know, everybody's brothers. We supposed to forgive one another. See, your plan won't work because of that mentality. It'll work for a few, but I'm just telling you now.
Oh, yeah, well, I already know there's not going to be a critical mass of people that will jump onto it. I'm looking at, you know what, just me personally, I fare better in a rural area than an urban area. And then any problems that I might have in an urban area, I can mobilize myself in a rural area to offset any minuses in a larger city, so to speak.
Well, again, you're going on the premise, you're forgetting about your philosophy. You're looking at it like a lone wolf. See, lone wolves starve to death. And the trick is this, Brother Ellie. Yeah, you can do it. Look, your personal achievement is good. Oprah Winfrey's personal achievement is good. But the thing is, it doesn't go in and solve it.
They're lone wolves, and you're right. And lone wolves in the long run don't make it.
That's right. Now, this thing about, hey, look, you know, you don't have as many problems in the rural areas as you have in the urban areas. See, everything has its problems attached to it. I agree with you. You know, they say good fences makes good neighbors. You can have enough space that, hey, look, you know, I don't have to put up with you and you don't have to put up with me. But the trick is, Brother L.A., what you're talking about is trying to get a place where you can be yourself and you don't have to worry about crowding in on one another or encroaching on each other's space. But now I will give you this. See, a lot of people of the opposite race is not going to like black folks' ability to be out there by themselves. Now, you're going to have to take that into consideration. All you got to do is look at the Honorable Elijah Muhammad when he bought all of that land in Alabama. So you're going to have to protect it. And we don't have the stomach to protect what we control. And plus, we don't want to control anything anyway. But now the thing is, it will work. It will work. And you don't need a whole bunch. I'm not talking about a critical mass. I'm talking about a group of people that's willing to go out there and do it. And there have been examples of people going out there.
Sure, you got Elijah Muhammad. You got, and I just found this out like 2 weeks ago. The United House of Prayer for all people.
That's right.
Yeah, I had heard of them and passed by their churches, I don't know, a gazillion times, but I didn't know the history of it until last week.
Yeah, and also you have Reverend Clegg with the Shrine of the Black Madonna that bought 18,000 acres there in Georgia. So now,
okay, I didn't know that. Okay.
I'll send it to you, but you do have people to do that. But now I'm going to give you this. Hey, I'm on the phone. But I will give you this. Wesley Snipes and Stevie Wonder bought so many acres there in Georgia. And
okay.
The New Orleans bought 400 and some acres, and they were side by side.
You talking
and
about Dr. York?
Yeah, yeah. Now, they kept harassing them and harassing them until they got all of that land back. Now, I don't know if Wesley Snipes still owned his or not, but now they kept going around until they found out York was doing some illegal stuff. But that didn't warrant them taking
up.
Yeah, but that didn't warrant
York to ever get out of prison.
I don't want him to get out, but I'm just telling you now that they took that land back after they locked him up. He paid cash for it now, and they took it. After he had paid cash for the land.
You know, another person who got locked up, and maybe we need to do a study on it. He passed over, but he was, Hebrew, Israeli, like, what was that dude's name? Yahweh ben Yahweh.
Yeah.
And he locked him up, too. He's dead now, but.
Well, and look, he was all about buying property and land. So now I'm just giving you examples that you got to watch out for, because no one, look, land is power. Property is power. And there's just a thing about, hey, not having black folks own and control land. So now you get, I'm just showing you people that were willing to do that. And now look, the verdict is still out as far as I'm concerned on Jones. What is it? Jones?
Jonestown.
That's right. The verdict is still out on that as far as I'm concerned, because the thing is, you know, black folks ain't supposed to go out and buy a whole bunch of land out there in a foreign country. But I'm just showing you, you got a noble idea. I'm showing you the pitfalls, and you can believe it or not. But until black folks become racist and they're willing to control the environment they live in and protect it,
well,
you
know,
might get one or two, like
Jim
you or
Jones. Jim Jones was a white dude, but the bulk of his congregation were black.
That's right. That's right. And he bought a large swath of land down there in Guyana.
Yeah, and that was primarily black money that allowed him to do all of that.
Of course. Look, black folks, if the idea is given to them right, they will embrace it, and they can achieve whatever that goal is. Now, you've gotten proof of that. And look, let me give you one other thing. All of that farmland, black farmland that was lost, the agriculture department, the people that was administering that program, administrators, took that land because they didn't want those black farmers to have that land. And look, you know the history. 16% of all of the black farms was black farmers coming out of slavery. They controlled about, what, 20 to 30 million acres of land the size of Maine and South Carolina.
They had control of a large amount.
Well, I'm giving you the facts. And the thing is, they slipped around there and they did everything they did, everything they could to get the hands out of those black hands, the land out of those black hands, to the point now, what, there's only about 4 million acres now. So all you got, look, you got to look at history. So when you do make a move like that, you'll know how to go in and protect it. Because the thing is, yes, there's some land out there. And I started to send you a map. There's not a lot of unclaimed land out there.
Mm-hmm.
And I sent you a list of all of those rich folks that owns millions and 2 million acres of land and everything else. There's not a lot of unclaimed arable timberland out there that you can just go out there and buy. But
right.
If you're going to be dealing with those people that own the land, the first thing comes up is, hey, look, I don't want them to have it, because I know if they have it, then they're going to be able to control and own things. The next thing is, we're not racist, because if we were racist, see, we'd want our own stuff for self-preservation, and we will be able to practice survival of the fittest. So now I get off and let you chew on it and let somebody else come in.
Let me ask you this now. With the internet, you know, we got better communication now. There was a group of black folk, I haven't followed up on it. You probably heard about it. They were trying to buy some kind of town somewhere in Georgia, and then Viola was telling me earlier this year, they were trying to buy like 99 acres of land. I don't know if they already bought it or they were in the process of buying 99 acres of land. Now I'm saying, I'm at the question I asked, with the internet out here, and where people are, you know, can tune into that information and find out where this stuff is. Do you think other, I mean, people will get together and do that, buy land?
Well,
maybe not as a big
look.
Group, but on, you know what, on a family level.
Brother L.A., look, every Sunday here in North Carolina is called a News and Observer paper.
Mm-hmm.
They have a section in there where you can buy houses, you can buy commercial property, and you can buy acres. And that's in every town or every state that you go in. And I'm going to say this here because, look, I beat up on these people enough. Creflo Dollar, P.D. Jakes, just your local churches, the money they take up and put in the bank every Monday to buy just about every stitch of land in every state. If they had the mindset like you're talking about. And look, these people represent people that's living in squalor in these inner cities. And
true.
They're taking that
that's
money every Sunday and putting it in white banks when they could do something for their people. And look, in these churches, they got skill sets that you were talking about is needed to go in and do
oh,
what
yeah,
they need
they're
to
they're
do.
They're carpenters, to, they're electricians, they're plumbers. They all kind of building trades people in all those churches.
They got engineers, they got agriculture specialists and everything else. So now, I'm just showing you what it means to not be a racist. And look, you got the fraternities and sororities that's out here stomping the yards and going on freaknicks and everything else. They're college graduates. Some of them go to these
right.
agriculture and mechanics colleges. They study agriculture. And I'm going to leave on this note. Right now, Brother L.A., they have a program for veterans. If you can find land, the VA will finance that property, and they will train you how to farm that property. They'll bankroll the purchase of that land, and they'll train you how to do that land. And not one mm-hmm. black veteran, I don't think, has taken them up on that. And I sent you another link. If Cory Booker is asking the government, passing a bill for the government to transfer 32 million acres of land back over to black farmers. Now, I know you don't agree with government aid when it comes
right.
to black folks. But now, white folks, you don't really give a shit. But I'm just saying now, and I'm being derogatory here, you don't care if they help white folks. But now when black folks go to the government for relief, you and other black conservatives and even some liberals have a
well,
problem with it.
Well, my whole thing is, that's why I put the maps out there. Instead of waiting on the government, and then you got to pick your poison on that. Instead of waiting on the government, just go out and get something.
Well, you can do both. White folks do
you
both.
Could.
They
well,
go out and get on their
you could do both. You're right.
Well, I'm just telling you, white folks do both. They get it on their own, and they let the government help them get some of it. So why can't we do both? But I'm just telling you now that what you
right.
have is a good idea, and I gave you reasons, pros and cons, on why it's a struggle. You know, we don't have the mind. We got the money, but we don't have the mind.
The mind.
And the trick is you got churches in every area of these states that know that land is out there, and they'd rather give it to a white boy than to take it and make it better for their followers. And I'm going to end on that note. And you got fraternity
okay,
and same thing.
Okay. All right, hold on. Reba, you there?
Yes, I am, yes, and I've got Brother Baba Will on the line. Who was that just speaking, by the way?
Brother Beasley, North Carolina.
Wow, awesome. I kind of get your voice mixed up with Brother Kianchi sometimes, but I'm starting to learn your voice.
I don't know how you
voice.
Can do that.
Well,
yeah,
okay,
please,
but I know the
they don't sound
they
nothing
speak.
Alike.
They don't. Well, as far as the language, they don't sound alike. I will
oh,
say
okay,
that.
Right.
But I love to speak the truth in love. But Baba Will actually is a veteran who's taking advantage of the resources. He is a scholar, intellectual. And with our Chicagoland initiative, we are actually trying to engage other veterans, like the one that I just dropped off, to take advantage of the resources that are available. So Baba Will is on the line. Just wanted to let him share. And by the way, I will say that it does seem like some of these ministers might be prejudice themselves. You know, it doesn't make sense. I think about that all the time. You know, these sororities, I'm an educator myself, and I'm like, well, why is that we can't help our own? I think it's just a choice. They also have the mindset, in my opinion, many of these members of these groups, leaders of the churches, administrators, some pastors, they feel like, hey, they understand the prejudice or supremacy mindset, that it works for those. When you step on the necks of the little people, and if you don't do that, I even had a minister to say, hey, it took me a long time to get to where I am. So in essence,
well, most churches, most churches are basically, all right, from my point of view, I'm just one person, they're family-based businesses, and that's how they look at it. And they're not even thinking about the community aspect, because the workers of the church are supposed to be in the community anyway.
Yeah, but they're not helping the family. Cause
you're right.
What is the brother's name once again? Brother Beasley. So just wanted to let Baba Will share, because I know the campaign and stuff going on. Today is election day. Baba Will, is your mic open? Are you available?
Yeah, well, we can talk about called the New Farmers Program.
The veteran support that's available to get farmland.
Hold on. So first you got to go to the USDA page on the internet. Look up New Farmers Program. Under the New Farmers Program, veterans are eligible to receive up to 10 acres of land and up to $500,000 for their development on that land. So, you can have a ranch as well. Now, I would tell you that, you just go to your state as well as your state agriculture department. So I don't know what's happening in North Carolina State Agriculture Department. Whatever state you're in, you want to go find out what's on the books for veterans with them as well. Because most of these programs are interrelated with state and federal. And so I would just the VA administration is supposed to have a program for a former veteran to receive contractual dollars for veteran type stuff, like if the army or military is doing something, you should be able to get a contract from them. But again, you have to go to your state and request. What's their relationship with your congressman and your U.S. senators? Have you called them out about this program, or are you aware of the program?
I'm not. I don't know about Beasley, but I'm not.
Okay, we go to USDA.gov and look up New Farmers, and then you can look up Veteran Farmers. Okay, and you have to fit that. You have to have had some experience in farming. Have y'all had any experience in farming?
Not me, but I'm not a farmer, though.
Okay.
What about you, Beasley, if you still is? Oh, he could have stepped away from his phone or something. But I'm not a farmer, though.
Okay, well, like I say, yes, USDA.gov, called the New Farmers Program. You know, you asking for assistance to be able to establish your, a farm or ranch. And, I think as veterans, you have to, reach out and hold them accountable. It's your life on the line for America.
Okay.
Brother LA is actually a land developer, so that would be if we attain land for building our tiny mobile solar home. That's part of why, actually, Brother LA was, Baba Will was in on one of our conversations. So that was the connect there, as building the home, people still need to eat, you know. So we actually began to work on developing, so we've gotten incorporated since then, Brother LA, and so forth. So we're building the infrastructure of that initiative, Chicago Land Farmers Initiative. So that just actually had not gotten you guys to connect with. But I wanted to let you know, Baba Will, that Brother LA did bring the farming portion of, the land development. So because we still would need, let's say we needed a shed or a greenhouse. So that's, so he's got like floor plans and so forth and building not only tiny solar homes, because we would need someone to be live near or on the farmland. So there's a whole concept and plan behind, and it coincides. It certainly will work together with Chicagoland Farmers Initiative, as well as the tiny mobile solar homes, because that would also produce jobs. Somebody's got a farm. We talked about that, as well as providing housing. I have a lot of young people who are homeless as well, so they got energy that some of us don't have, and so we could teach them how to farm and take them to the next level, the independence. Thank you so much, Bob Will. I know that it's election day.
I guess to go.
Thank you so much for calling in. Thank you for taking my call. Have a good one. In a minute.
Okay. Who's running for? I mean, not running for office. What are they electing today? Mayor, city council, alderman, or what?
Yeah, several things going on here. So we got people running for Congress and things like that. I was hoping to get have the person who was going against Alderman Dowell. She's from the Third Ward. She's the alderman who was stealing property from seniors in the Third Ward. She's running for Congress now. So the mayor. This is a mayor election.
Okay. All right, we're going to take another call here. 314, you're up next. We'll be back in about 3 minutes.
Down.
everyone lives here, chess, the chess version, looking at the landscape. Now, let me put this out there before we go our next caller at 314. Is number one, I'm not advocating that there be a mass movement of black folk or anybody else. That's not going, the probability of that happening is very low. Although, I need to study the Great Migrations 1 and 2 because there were a lot of people that participated in that. But in any event, from what I've studied historically, particularly among the slaves, former slaves that bought their freedom and started black townships, and even if they weren't black, like Houston, Texas, Houston, Texas, is as big as it is now, Houston, Texas was started by two brothers, two people. And one of them, you know, and it was, well, you throw in the sprouts, three people. You know, so a lot of your small towns around the globe started with family members. You know, with the black townships, you know, New Philadelphia, Illinois, which no longer exists, that was started by free Frank McWhorter, born a slave, purchased his freedom. He crossed the river from Missouri into Illinois, and he bought 80 acres of land, just 80 acres of land, and then he freed other family members, so they helped him to develop that. You know, Hopkins Park, Illinois, you know, founded by, you know, two or three black families. You know, Highland Beach, Maryland, population, they might have about 51 people that live in Highland Beach in Anne Arundel County, Maryland. I've been there about at least twice. And that was started by one of Frederick Douglass's sons. I forgot the dude's name. But his wife, Laura Douglass, when they would turn back from a hotel, and, you know, they bought some land, and they started Highland Beach. So a lot of these towns, I mean, even Eatonville, Florida, which is about 45 minutes away from me, Joseph, what's that dude's name? Right on the tip of my tongue. I don't want to say Joseph Smith. But, you know, he had some money set aside, former slaves, and he bought, you know, the first parcels of land to form the town of Eatonville. And then later on, about 26 others, you know, they all pooled their resources and expanded the boundaries of Eatonville. But typically, a lot of these towns were black or white. A lot of them were started out as small little family ventures. So, no, you're not going to... you know what it is? It's just people have interests and whatever. And if you're, and one day we're going to study the royal family of England, because King whoever, and we'll trace it back to the specific king, he looked into the future and said, all right, how can I provide for future generations after I'm gone, taking into account that, you know, they're going to marry into, they're going to get married to an idiot or something like that. Well, how can I structure this where somebody can't come in by marriage and then just topple everything? And we'll look at the word royalty, which basically the royal family, they're landlords. They're landlords. All right. Anyway, but, yeah, I'm just putting it out there. Just deal with your own individual family or household. Get that straight. Don't worry about the million people. Just, you know, if you got a two-person household, conquer that by buying maybe, you know what, a house, and then maybe get a start small. That's all I'm saying. 314, your mic is open.
Hey, I'm glad you
had an intermission for 3 minutes. I had to vomit.
Okay. Well, I'm glad you got yourself cleaned up.
What did you say your grandmother told you? And some of the stuff that you hear is nauseous. People talk, talk, talk. I've been listening. How long have I been listening to your show?
For a while.
People talk, 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 talk. And they'll find some unsuspecting, innocent soul confused and delirious, full of woe is me, and they'll come latch on to some of that talk, 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 talk. What did you say your grandmother told you?
Mother. She said in some cases I'll probably need to get a white front.
Well, you know, I don't know about the front. I would get somebody for anything. See, when I put up my office buildings, I couldn't put my office buildings up with no damn all black crew. You know that, L.A.? All my bridges.
Yeah, well, some information that you sent me with the Radio 1, the TV 1, whatever they call it now. How, Kathy,
you know, that is a good point. Those banks and those businesses are owned by, they got black ownership in them, but not to the extent that you think they are. Those buildings, those are businesses that control CEOs and CFOs are whites, which is all right. Nothing wrong with that. You gonna have no all black community.
I don't want to get the job done. That's number one. And then in a lot of areas, industries or what have you, there might be, like, for instance, what you've done, what you were doing professionally, and what Harmon Russell did professionally.
Yeah, I like him.
You don't run into, all right, you might know, you must know more than I do on this, but I haven't run into too many or heard of too many black folk in that line of business at that level.
No, you're not going to find any. I don't know of any either. But
that's what I'm saying. So
going with Herbert, see, Herbert was a general contractor. You don't know. Herman Russell,
like,
I'm going to
tell you a real prime example, like ports, seaports. Other than you, I haven't read, heard about, not even in the black enterprise, black folk in the seaports. So
well,
we're absent from a lot of stuff.
You know that seaport has got an airport. It's got a train port. It's got liquefied petroleum gas facilities, both storage and pumping, oil refinery. It's not large, though. It's small.
See, you're talking in areas that, I mean, to be honest about it, on a lot of these talk shows, blogs, YouTube videos, what have you, when you hear the typical, well, whatever you call, whatever it is, the typical black entrepreneur, I don't know what that is. But, you know, barbershop, beauty salon, somebody
that's
in the fashion design.
That's all they know.
That's
and
I'm
happy
about.
That my family is not one of the ones that was cursed.
Now, let me ask you this, Bianca. How can a family become uncursed?
You have to put forth the will to break it. And we were designing a 3,300 metric ton daily metric ton ammonia plant.
Now, you brought up a term. I've heard the term metric ton before, but you're the first black person I've heard say it.
Using the Haber-Bosch method.
Now, I'm not familiar with that at all. All right.
And then we got another poultry farm that harvests every 52 days about 60,000 birds. And six houses got 60,000. That's 360,000 birds. That's under roof. That's growing. And then we had to design this is a broiler house. You had to design the egg layers and hatches in order to. You have to have a incubator system for producing the chicks.
Mm-hmm.
Because after 52 days, you got to clean that house out and sanitize it. Then you got to stock it with baby chicks. And you can't depend on the commercial market. You got to grow your own. Mm-hmm. Produce your own. You have to be able to grow food for the broilers, so you have to have farmland that's growing the products that they're going to eat, especially silage. You have to have veterinarians on staff to tend to the health of the birds. You're going to lose about 3% a day.
I heard you're going to lose some chickens in the process.
Yeah, you're going to lose chickens. So you have to have a disposal system, which I designed with compost. You put it in one end, and about after 7 days, they come out the other end as compost. And you have to be able to feed that compost, because in order for the compost, you got to have certain materials, particularly carbon, to kick it off.
Mm-hmm.
Then you got to have a processing facility. After you harvest them, you got to take them and have them processed. Then you got to have refrigeration, keep them cold. And then you got to have a delivery system to take them out to your retailers.
There's some moving pieces there, so.
And everything has to be strictly sanitized. All the houses are pressurized and kept at a certain temperature. With the baby chicks, they have to be kept at about 100 degree temperature for a certain period of time. Then after they get a little bit larger, you can lower the temperature. But the house has to be pressurized so you don't have the birds under stress. And once they get up to about 4.25 pounds, you're ready to harvest it. You don't want to get no larger than that.
Mm.
And you have to monitor the feed, too.
Have to
monitor the ammonia content in the house.
What about these places that sell these like large chicken wings? You think steroids are involved with that?
They sell a whole wing. Yeah, well, you buy whole wings. Your quarters was thigh and drumstick. Now they separate the two. When I was a kid growing up, we had thigh and drumstick connected together.
Hmm.
Yep. So all those things are possible, especially over in Africa. You can't do that today here in the United States because these bigger corporations got this stuff sold up. And what they do is rent out, they rent from couple of individuals that used to be in the business. They got, for instance, they got barns. Our poultry farm is like 600 foot long, 80 foot wide. Our buildings. 480,000 square feet.
Well, you sound like you're practically self-contained.
Gotta be. But you can't do that here because you, these larger corporations, your Pilgrims and so forth, they, what they do is they provide the chicks and you just provide the space is what you see going on today. They provide the chicks.
Okay.
You bring them in. After you sanitize and clean the house, change out the material that the birds walk on. I can't think of the name of that. The whole house got to be washed down. You don't want your ceiling no higher than 10 feet, maybe about 8 feet. Big enough so you can get
some
equipment in there to gather up all the litter. The word I'm looking for. Now you can, your litter can be.
Well, they can convert that into fertilizer.
Be wood shaving. You have to take your litter and put it in burns. So a chemical process that goes on in the litter, which will kill the bacteria, dartling beetles, and all that kind of stuff. And that's, you have to pile it up about 4 foot high in a burn, and the chemical activity will produce heat. And you put a monitor on it, a thermometer on it. After the temperature rises and go back down, then you can spread it out again. And they got other equipment too, like the Red Devil that uses propane gas and it shoots out a flame from an apparatus about 8 foot wide. You just drive down through the house and heat up that litter, but you got to be careful it don't catch on fire. So it's a lot of things that can be done. More so in other lands than here in the United States, because like I say, that these big corporations have pretty much took control of that. And it's not really that much. It depends on what you're doing, but it has to be closely monitored because the profit margin is very, very slim. Something go wrong, and you can't be operating without no insurance. You wiped out. L.A., how much do you know about farming? Somebody asked you about that, didn't they?
I tell people I'm not a farmer.
How about building houses?
Nothing about it.
How about building houses?
Regulated houses, little or nothing. I just do the little tiny off-grid places. That's it.
Oh, okay. Well, y'all just having discussion.
Nothing on the grid. My whole thing is off-grid.
Yeah, you at the wrong age to be getting involved in that stuff anyway. And your other old boy.
A lot of people. Well, a lot of people that are doing the tiny house thing are people, I would say, a good portion of the people that I met at the events I've gone to are like 40 plus. And quite a few women are doing it.
Yeah, but see, they're just
building
one.
I've gone to about four or five events.
Yeah, they aren't building the whole community. They're not building those developments. They just building one.
No. Most of the people that I've personally met over the years, they're building for themselves. They're building for themselves.
You're talking,
maybe two of them, you know, they might take on a client or two. But the majority of them, hands down, have been women. The majority of them have been white women. And they're building for themselves.
Yeah, you aren't talking about building no development. That takes a lot of skill. But you hire people to do it. But farming, you too old to be getting in the farming business.
It'll kill you.
No, farming, well, other than a little small teeny tiny garden, yeah, if anything, all right, I got the land, I have to have somebody that has the green thumb and they know what they're doing. But no, I'm not a farmer. Go.
So what you're going to hear is a lot of talk, especially for some of these people that probably got their butts kicked by white folks in the past and they're trying to come out with some sort of revenge.
Well, there's a whole lot out there. I mean, ranching, which I know nothing about, there's a whole lot of opportunities out here that people need to explore. So the only thing I wanted to do the last couple of days is saying, all right, from a land point of view, okay, take a look at these places. Just don't be, because 92% of us in the United States, or in the city, and they don't know what's, 30 minutes to an hour away from them, they could find an opportunity where their cost of living could drop, or they can find something professionally. But a lot of people just there, they can't see past the city. And most cities, the larger ones at least, they offer comfort and conveniences that people are addicted to. We don't want to go a long way to go to a Walmart or McDonald's, to a school, to church. We want things that are close. So that's that on that. All right. So on that note, people, we're going to wrap it up for today. We'll probably visit this at least once a month. No one lives here. The opportunities that exist right here in the United States where, let me throw out the last statistic. We can take all the people in the world, which is about 8 billion people now, knocking at the door of it. We can take all the people in the world, put them in the state of Texas. That's over 100. That's 195 countries recognized by the UN, but 200-plus countries, if you include the de facto countries. We can put them all in the state of Texas, and everybody would have at least 2 acres of land each out of 8 billion people. And we're not at 8 billion yet. Knocking at door, but not there yet. So there's a lot of space out there. But if you stay crammed into that little 5%, that, once again, if you got a, it's the law of supply and demand. You got all these people, you got 86% of the population living on only 5% of the landmass, which is going to drive up the price of food, shelter, civil services, medical care, it just drives it up. But if you develop the skill set to live where nobody lives, you practically don't even need money. And on that note, have a good rest of the day.